Ladies and gentlemen, are you ready for the dawn of America of America Audio with your host, Tim Banal.
No commercials, no subscriptions, no network, no rules, and at the end of the day, my friends, no comparison. And tonight, that is really true because it's, as I joked on all our various areas there, it's the first ever, and since it's our last season, I guess technically last, Halloween special. I can't believe we've never done a show live on Halloween night, but we finally done it, and we have the perfect guest. If we were having like if we were doing like UFOs or conspiracies or something, I wouldn't call it a Halloween special, but this is like, it all worked out so perfectly, and I think I said this on the show last week, but you know, I had the awesome opportunity to meet our guest tonight, Linda Godfrey, at the International Cryptozoology Conference up in Portland around Labor Day weekend, and we plan to do the show again. And I was like, I'll get her on in October because it's like monsters and stuff, and you know, things get away from you. And I was trying to figure out, you know, when we're gonna do it and everything. And I'm like, oh, Linda, she must be so busy, and she was very busy. It was hard to pin her down. Finally, I was like, well, this is a complete shot in the dark, but, and I really feel terrible for asking, but is there any way possibly that you're not doing anything on Halloween night? And she was free! So, hence the Halloween Spooktacular here tonight, the first and last ever Halloween special, because I was absolutely psyched. Like I said, when I was talking to her in my mind, I'm envisioning it would be so cool if I could interview her on Halloween night, but don't get your hopes up. But we're doing it, and Linda Godfrey is here to talk about the book Monsters Among Us, which actually came out over a year ago, but, you know, I was barely doing shows last year, so we didn't get a chance to have her on. So it all worked out. It was kismet, because here she is tonight on Halloween night, October 2017. Welcome back to the show, Linda. It was an absolute thrill getting the chance to meet you in Portland, and I'm psyched that we got you on the show tonight to talk about the book and celebrate Halloween with listeners.
Yes, I was that was a fabulous, fabulous conference, and I was so glad to see you in person and all kinds of other people. And yeah, it just happens. I normally don't book Halloween evening for anything because I love the trick and treaters too much. It's kind of a big thing with me. You know, I decorate my vestibule up and everything. But for some reason,
nice.
The timing just worked out so well. Yeah, I thought, well, why not? This would be perfect. And I'm so sorry this is going to be your last season.
Yeah, it's the last season of the show, but I'm going to be doing other stuff. I got like three or four book ideas. I want to take the time to finally, you know, do stuff. You know, if that makes
sure.
any sense.
Sure.
You know,
it's
been fun interviewing people, but it's like you interview people for so long that are doing exciting things, like writing books like Monsters Among Us, and then all of a sudden you're like, oh my God, I've been doing this for a decade. It's like, I'd like to go do something. so that's what I'll be.
I'll
be doing.
There.
You know.
No, I understand. I worked for the newspaper for 10 years after the Beast of Bray Road story came out, and after long, somewhere about 8 to 9 years, I realized I was re-interviewing some of the same people, you know, that I'd started with before. And it's not like this field where, you know, the authors kind of come and cycle as long as they have new books coming. This is where you're trying to find within a tri-county area, you know, enough really good meaty stories to do, and there's just only so many of them. So I was ready to start something else, and that's when I quit and began doing the books. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. And I can see, you probably can identify with, I was kind of laughing today where I was saying it's like, if you're a ghost hunter, this is like today's, you're like a fat guy with a bushy white beard on Christmas today. It's like, this is when everyone wants to talk to ghost hunters. Like they're on the news, whether it's the Poughkeepsie Ghost Paranormal Group or you know, the Tulsa Ghostbusters. Like they find their way out of the local news. It's like everybody wants to talk about this stuff this time of year. It's great.
Yeah, and the same with the subjects of my books, although I keep trying to pound it into people's heads that, you know, monsters and upright canines and Bigfoot are really not Halloween type things. They're really not those ooky spooky spectral types of things that scare people on Halloween. You know, they don't really have much as much as I can tell to do with ghosts, although some people might claim a few exemptions, because there are all different types of upright hominoid looking things, you know, and they vary in many ways.
Absolutely, yeah. Well, we'll dispel the rumors and confusion tonight on the show, so that's great. But yeah, absolutely, it's like these are, as I was kind of marveling to you in Portland, it's like these are hard to pin down in a lot of ways. And you mention it in the book where it's like there's, I mean, I think it was you who was telling me this, but I may be mistaken, but it was like this dogman, for lack of a better term, this sort of like whole genre, like, was kind of, it wasn't exactly, it didn't enter into the realm of cryptozoology until like the last few years, where now it's like people are kind of opening their minds to like, all right, where, like, it's been around for so long, people are finally like looking at it in a different light, where they're like, all right, where do we put this to start? Like, where does this even go?
Right, because a lot of people, really until the last few years, and I still get it occasionally, insisted that it could not be anything but a dog-headed, snout-nosed Bigfoot that walked like a dog walks, which is on its toe pads, which is so completely different. Those are all the things that define a canine versus a primate. You know, so that just never made any sense to me at all. And other people were just denying that it existed, or that if it was some sort of just fluke occult happening, all kinds of different things to just sort of shunt it aside. But eventually, you know, every time I wrote a book and it came out, I would get so many responses from people all around the country, the U.S. and the world, that another book would come after that. And eventually they were just, you know, I just kept churning out the books as they came to me so that the stories would be out there. And eventually it took hold. And also, I think the internet had a lot to do with that too, because, you know, originally when I started writing the books, I think my first two books, The Beast of Bray Road and The Poison Widow, came out in 2003. And there was internet, but not in the way it is today. You know, there was no such thing as the Facebook page. Not many people were on Facebook. I can remember one of my sons saying something, "Mom, there's this new thing, they call it Friendster, and I can find, you know, one of my friends, and then meet his friends," you know. And so, I mean, it just, the technology wasn't there to spread it as easily as it is now. And now there are all different, you know, people coming up with, I mean, it's on not just TV shows, which was one way of spreading it in the beginning, but all the podcasts that people come up with, and people that are you know, reading and sometimes kind of sensationalizing, or having witnesses just call in and tell their own stories. So you can get the information so many more ways. I think it finally struck home with people that, hey, there cannot be this many people all over the U.S. and the world telling us about these sightings that are, by and large, pretty much identifiable as an upright canine type of thing, unless there really were people seeing it. You know, it doesn't mean we know what it is,
right,
but I think it hit home that these many people are seeing it, that it would be impossible for such a large, widespread, well integrated collusion to take place, you know, where everybody, there were, say, you know, 15,000 people who had all agreed to report, make a false report about a canine. You know, that, I mean, you just have to stretch farther than just having the idea of, okay, they're seeing something, what is it, you know, to come up with all these other explanations.
Exactly. And I noticed, like, a pattern, sort of in a sense, in the book from the cases that you investigated. And you can correct me if I'm wrong, because maybe there are. I'm sure there are other cases that didn't make it into the book. But it's like I got the impression that these people who had these different experiences, they weren't like Linda Godfrey fans, and then they had the experience. Like they had the experience,
no, no.
And then they were trying to figure out what they saw, and they found you.
Right. Right.
So it's
yeah,
just a
that's
people, you know, so the idea that like this is induced, you know, that like, you know, they read about this thing that's kind of becoming a thing, and then all of a sudden they were like they saw it. No, they had no idea this was a thing.
That's really true. And you know, many people, because I mean, it's not something that's on your daily news every day. Many people, it's just under their radar, and they can go 10, 20, 30 years before realizing there are other people who saw the same thing. They'll carry this burden with them all that time thinking, man, something's wrong with me. I'm the only one that ever saw this. You know, why did I see that there? And they really kind of suffer in a way until they get a chance to talk. They'll just say, I'm just so glad to talk to somebody who doesn't think I'm crazy. And it is true with the Monsters Among Us book, that is actually kind of a different subset of sightings that have been reported to me, because I also realized that over the years, and it's been like 26 years now since I broke that first story and have been collecting the reports ever since, it dawned on me that although I try to be really open, sometimes, you know, reports come in that just seem so far out of the box, and you don't know how to align them with the other reports, that, you know, I might not have been putting them all out as I should. And I realized I wanted to call this book The Stranger Side of Strange Creatures, but luckily better heads than mine prevailed at the publisher because they came up with a great title. But the idea was to show that there are also sightings, well, probably, you know, rough estimate of maybe 90% just show something that looks like a wolf or a dog or a hybrid wolf dog walking on its hind legs. It's got a long snout. It's got the pointed ears on top of the head, fangs, you know, animal eye shine, usually yellow, green, something like that. Walking on its toepits, it's got a tail covered with fur. It's not like part dog, part wolf, part human. It's almost entirely canine. It's just that it runs on its hind legs, which is not a supernatural
right.
feat. It's something any of them can do. But then there's this other, you know, somewhere between, I don't know, 10 to 7%, it's hard to say exactly, where people do occasionally see one metamorphosing, or they'll see it glowing as if it had bioluminescence, or, you know, it will just do wacky things. It'll be wearing a hoodie and smoking a cigarette. And there's, you know, several good witnesses. Seriously, I have one incident very similar to that in the book. Things that don't make any sense, but they still were very real, often witnessed by more than one person at the same time, you know, who agree on it, so they weren't hallucinating. And I thought, really, if I'm not putting these types of reports out, then I'm really not investigating fully, because I'm prejudging. I'm saying, well, there have to be some things that can't be right. Who am I to say that, really? You know, I've always, from the beginning, tried to be the reporter and report accurately what other people were telling me, you know, and not be putting my own spin or my own conclusions on any of the stories. You know, I do not have an agenda for what I like it, want it, or need it to be. You know, whatever it turns out to be is fine with me. I would like to know. I'm not sure that'll happen in my lifetime, but, you know, It really is not investigating if you don't leave yourself open to possibilities.
Absolutely, yeah, yeah. Well, that's you touched on a number of reasons why I'm a big Linda Godfrey fan, because, you know, I was blown away in Portland, you know, listening to your presentation, because, you know, you're throwing all these you're kind of like brainstorming in a sense, or spitballing up there, you know, what the different things this could be, or the different reasons why this could be, and it was, like, so refreshing, because you know, thankfully you got your hands on this originally instead of somebody else, because some other people could be like, it's a dog species of Pete, you know, and have some crazy theory like that they push. But you were up there being like, it could be this, could be that, you know, we're trying to figure it out. We don't know. It's like, thank you. Thank you.
But
yeah,
we
it's very
know.
Mystifying.
You know,
I find the topic very mystifying.
It is. It is. And there are quite a few people who will make up their minds and who have decided it is this and it is that or it isn't that without really having the ability to know for sure. I mean, how can you know that for sure unless you've really had, even if you've had a good look at one, and I do take the opinions of those who have seen one up close and interacted with it, you know, maybe a little more strongly than others, because I think they do have a right to believe based on a close-up encounter if they are lucky enough to have something like that and walk away. Although, I don't have injuries reported, almost never in 26 years, just maybe two incidents in all that time. But yeah, it's just I don't blame people for having that idea, for wanting to say, well, okay, I know that this is what it is and I believe that and that's that, because it's human nature. And it's really hard to go against that human nature. We want to name things. We want to figure out right away whether it's safe for us, harmless or harmful, because it's sort of instinctive, or we wouldn't be here as a species if we didn't have that sense, you know, of figuring out rather quickly whether, you know, it should be fright or flight, whether we should run away or try and catch something. And, you know, I've had a lot of people say, well, if I saw one. It is. You know, we have that natural instinct within us. Yeah, and so I don't blame people for being human and wanting to call it something, but for myself, you know, like people will say, well, if I saw one, you know, I would just run up to it. And I'm like, really?
Yeah.
Really? You know, you don't, you can think you know what it is, and that's fine with me, but do you really know what it is?
That's an easy thing to say from the safety of Twitter, folks.
That's
kind of a good segue in a sense, because there was one line that you mentioned, or you had in the book, that I was like, oh, poor Linda, because you said there's a story in there which is touching on what we sort of touched on already, is that these like people who have these experiences, you know, they're just like happy to talk to somebody about them. And one of the first stories in the book is about these a brother and sister who like encountered what it sounds like a man who sort of transformed into a wolf man or a werewolf or a dog man or a bipedal canine cryptid, as I like to call them, because that's the most encompassing. And you mentioned in the book that you're like, that's not exactly something you see all the time or hear about all the time. People seeing that transformation. And I thought the part where I said, poor Linda, was then you mentioned, well, I get emails or I get letters or something, you know, people communicate to me sometimes and they say that that they're werewolves and they can transform into werewolves. But until I see the video of that, I'm going to have to be skeptical of it. And I was just thinking to myself, like, who are these people writing to you, like, that are saying this? It's so, it seems so silly.
Well, you know, my thought is, if they are so anxious to have us believe that they are real and that they do transform, you know, and that the Hollywood style of werewolves is reality, if they're that anxious, well, then they should be willing to back up their words, you know, by, I say, next time you have your girlfriend chain you in the basement because it's a full moon, set up a video camera over in the corner where you can't knock it down, and then send me the video. And
exactly.
I'll put it on YouTube,
exactly.
And then we'll all know. And so far, I've never received a reply after that. And I've only done that several, you know, three times maybe.
It's just, to me, it's like I'm like reading that thing. I'm like, oh, you know, that's the kind of thing that frustrates me. This kind of popped into my head when we were talking earlier. I may have missed one of your stories if this does happen, but is there – the big thing in Bigfoot research now, or the Bigfoot community, let's say, is sort of this idea of, like, cohabitation. Now, I know there are stories in the book where, like, bipedal canine cryptid revisits the place multiple occasions. But there are any stories that you've heard yet, because I feel like this will be something that comes up someday, of, like, someone claiming that one of these things – frequents their property and they have a friendly relationship. It's kind of almost like that the people claiming to be werewolves. It's like, you know, that they say, oh, yeah, there's one, he comes through my yard and I leave apples for him, and, and you know, but I can't tell you where I live in Illinois or something like that.
I know that there are people, I have some good friends who really believe that most of the upright canines are like that and harmless, but the few that I know like that don't talk about cohabiting with them. They still they have a lot of respect. It's not like you'd want to go up and, you know, cuddle with it or pet it like a dog or anything like
of that order.
Most of the people I know who've had them hanging around their property are terrified and don't
yeah.
want it there, you know, properly. And, well, what I recommend, people say, well, what should we do if we see one? And my answer is always treat it with the same respect that you would have for any other large predatory animal, because if they are part wolf or part wolf hybrid, which are sometimes even more dangerous around men because they don't have that fear of men, then you want to just give it the respect of giving it its space, you know, and there are other things you can do. I have learned over time there are things that discourage it, which is they don't like lights. You know, I always tell people to get yard lights, the brightest they can, and preferably either motion activated or remote control.
So they can flip them on easily.
And put as many electronic devices around your house as you can. You know, get a couple cheap trail cams, whatever else you can have out there that seems like an electronic or monitoring. They do not like kind of like no-nos. And then now this seems counterintuitive because a lot of people do believe they're natural creatures. I'm kind of squarely on the fence on this one myself because I've seen examples of both. But they do seem to be deterred somewhat when people have religious services and when, with Christians, it would be holy water maybe, or with a Native American, it might be a sage smoke that you put it. They put it around the perimeters of the property and over the windows and have a blessing of the house and the property. And sometimes that does it. I've had some people just get so fed up. They went out and stood and yelled on and went on their porch and yelled at them to leave them alone and never come back. And sometimes that has happened too, you know, and seemed to work for people. And lots of times these are the people who will write to me. I've had more than I've ever been able to put out in print because they'll write to me and tell me, but they do not want even an anonymous accounting of what happened to
them.
They're completely terrified. They want the subject to just go away and leave them alone forever, and they don't want it in print. So it does happen, and there is hope.
See, that's the kind of thing that I can imagine. There's a slight delay, I think, between our two voices, so I may cut you off by accident, and there may be a pause after I finish talking, so I apologize, and I'll try not to.
Sure. No problem.
That's the kind of thing that kind of drives me crazy a little bit, and I can imagine it must be, you know, you seem like a more patient person than me, so maybe, and you've been dealing with this for two decades plus, but it's like, I hear you say that, and then you hear, like, the skeptical argument where it's like, oh, these people make up their stories. Or, you know, it's like they're not making up their stories if they're telling Linda they don't want anyone else to ever know. Like, that's the antithesis of somebody making up their story. Like, you know, it's Because when you hear that kind of stuff, that's the kind of thing, you know, it's like, oh, this is real, folks. Like if you're hearing from people who are like, don't ever tell a soul that this happened to me, it's like, okay, that's I kind of believe that more than I thought I might, you know.
Right. Yeah, and there are people. I mean, occasionally, I will meet someone that I believe is making it up, or sometimes they'll just lie to me right in my face. Not very many, and this is a very small minority of people. It's happened maybe 2 or 3 times in 26 years, where I've said, are you telling me the truth or are you lying to me? And they'll go, we're not lying. No, we're not lying. And then I find out that they were. And that's happened twice. And I was suspicious both times, but I kind of, you know, thought, well, if they say right out loud that they're not lying, where are you supposed to go? I can't afford to give polygraph tests to people. They cost $1,000 and up, you know. And actually, the one time we did have all the polygraph tests taken was in the episode American Monsters, or excuse me, American Werewolves, of Monster Quest in their first season, which was based pretty much on my book, Hunting the American Werewolf. And it did, by the way, I always mention this, it did also include Bigfoot witnesses, and it was not made clear in the production that this was so, you know. So it sounds like they're all talking about the upright canines, but some of the witnesses are talking about Bigfoot in that, and it was a surprise to me when the show came out and I watched it for the first time. But
that was how they
chose to do it. But regardless of that, 8 or 9 people, more than actually were able to fit onto the finished show, and every single person came out with no lying or whatever you want to call it, intended or used. Everybody passed it perfectly. And I know the producers were shocked because there were a couple of people they didn't believe had a strong enough story and thought might fail it. But every single person passed it strongly. So
that's great.
That says
something too. Well, I hate the sort of expression, but I must use it in a sense because it's true. I probably just hate it because it just leads us to no answers. But it's like, I believe that they believe they had this experience. You know what I'm saying? It's like, I don't know what happened to them, you know? I'm not quite sure.
And I think that's valid.
It's one of the more vexing, this is really, really vexing mystery, Linda.
It is. And I do think that it's okay and valid to think of it that way. You know, there are lots of ones that I don't pretend to understand, but I do believe that the person had the experience and it was real to him as or her as they described it. And sometimes I will, if it's really out there, like a couple of the stories in Monsters Among Us, I had the people sign statements saying that, as to the best of their knowledge, everything that they told was true and correct. And I do also take the time to vet things as best I can. You know, if they mention just incidental things like town names or, you know, certain facts or things that should have been going on at that time, or something like the weather that I can go back and check, I do that. And almost always it checks out very well. And usually there's such weird incidentals that no one would ever think to put into a story, you know, or that someone would fact check it. But it almost always
turns
out
like,
that
on Golden Pond. Yeah, it was like we went to see the, you know, the first night was on Golden Pond. It's like, oh, you can match that. It's like, okay, he's telling the truth.
Exactly.
Why would he include that in the story? Yeah.
Right.
Well, I want to like kind of hone in a little bit on the one part of the book because I was absolutely compelled by this stuff. I was riveted, and that's sort of like this whole. And you bring it up at the beginning of the book, and then really delve into it with this like mist stuff. Is the whole like sort of portal idea? We have kind of a portal obsession here on the show. I told you about this in Portland. I don't know if you got the chance to check out Adam Davies' experience, but Adam Davies had an encounter with a portal that's like. Just captured the imagination of everyone who's heard it and listens to the show. It's one of these things that comes up all the time. So when I was reading your book, I was like, portals! Because I find them fascinating, and I think that's another thing that's kind of starting to emerge a little bit more, but this talk about a controversial topic, it's like people flip out if you start bringing up portals.
They do, because I think the general traditional view of portals is that it's something from fairy tales. You know, it's something like, you know, somebody getting lost in a fairy kingdom and they eat the magic biscuit and turn into a fairy themselves. You know, there's so many fairy tale aspects of it. It's very hard for us to grasp that something like this could be real. And, you know, I'm just like everyone. It's hard for me too. But when you consider that our top leading physicists right now have carried mathematics and physics equations to the point where, and based on experiments, hard science, very hard science experiments, involving the very tiny, most minute parts of matter, that not only are there parallel worlds or other worlds, but that they must intersect and interact with us at some point here and there. There is a new article on it that I just, this happened to be covered on the Mother Nature Network, which is not who did the, they're just writing about it, that someone else, the new quantum experiments. But the title of it was Parallel Worlds Exist and Interact with Our World, Say Physicists. And there were a whole bunch of different magazines and things that covered this topic. So if you Google that, but it was datelined November 6, 2014. So that's only 3 years ago. And you can find very many other similar things where it's written out in detail that I won't go into because I'm not a physicist and not really trained or equipped to talk about such things in detail. But, you know, it is true that if you go back through human history, all of, you know, all of our religious text, literary pieces that we have, you know, you go back to the Sumerians, any civilization, anywhere, they all have this sense that there is a somewhere else, that somehow we're connected with it, you know, whether it's, you know, the Viking idea of hell or Valhalla or the Christian heaven and hell, or you go back to, you know, just even the nature tribes have this idea that there's another realm where all the animal spirits come from, you know, and that there are spirit people and animal people that belong to these other realms. The idea is there. It's omnipresent. It's like it's built into us. And I think we always have to stop and pay attention when there's something that's so basic to the human psyche, you know, that it's there. So if this is then there, who are we to say that there's no way for us to interact? If there was no way for us to interact with it, we wouldn't know it was there. We wouldn't have all these tales of the heroes going and coming back, and you know, it's something that seems real. And I know people who have seen portals where literally looking in the sky and see a square or a window like opening where it's the opposite time of day than what they are experiencing. It's dark and they're looking into sunshine and blue skies. And you can find that sort of experience seems to be happening more and more later too. So
really?
I don't know if people are just more aware of it. Well, maybe people are just more willing to accept even listening to stories about it. But it really does go very well with a lot of the Native American traditions, because right from the beginning I've always thought, well, you know, maybe these are things that were here, you know, that the Native American people knew about and have more to say before the Europeans came, and they're keeping it in their tribal legacies. And what I've heard from most of them, you know, and I don't mean to say that every Native American tribe believes the same thing, because they're very individual and they have their own nations and their own thoughts. But this actually is a very widespread idea, which is that the upright canines, which most of them agree exist, and the Bigfoots and some of the water creatures are all primarily, or at least originally, spirit creatures that came from what they call the spirit world. And I'm sure there's a much more complex way to interpret that little phrase than just saying the spirit world, because their religious ideas are very complex. But let's just say the spirit world, and that they came originally from the spirit world, and that when they want or need to go back, they can. They know where the windows or the doors or the portals are in order to get back to the spirit world. And that it's not like when they're here, they can be completely flesh and blood. We hear them, their feet when they're running. We see them, you know, eating roadkill or whatever they have to eat. They're solid. They leave furs behind. They can leave scat, but they don't always. Sometimes they'll leave footprints, but the footprints start in the middle of a field where there was no obvious place for them to have dropped from, you know.
That's how you start. That's how you start the book. I was like,
exactly.
I got very excited.
Exactly.
Portals. I said, and I was like, what is, this is a portal
exactly.
story.
A lot of it is,
amazing.
You know, my takeaway from all of this and all of these things that I've studied and the Native American tradition just fits the factual reports as we've received them, better than any other paradigm. It accounts for all the different permutations of these creatures that people see, and it makes me think that reality is not heavily one side, all flesh and blood, and then all of a sudden, boom, you're a pixie, pure spirit and something else on the other end of it. I think that it's more of a sliding scale of reality is how I see that, you know, and I can find more and more things that sort of bear that out, you know, in many ways. You know, the Bible, of course, myself being a Christian, is one place I look. But even in, you know, in other cultures and other religious writings, you can see that same sort of thing, where somebody comes from the other realm, they still have some of the attributes, and maybe we call them superpowers now, just for a kind of a facetious way to look at it. They still have those attributes where people can tell they're a little special, but they can be flesh and blood, and sometimes they can go back to that other world. So, again, it's just so inherent in us as people that I certainly could never dismiss it myself.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Well, it's interesting when you put it that way, because it's like it all this, in a sense, it's kind of like we say with like ghosts and angels and demons. It's like all that, it may just be that we as a culture like don't have a collective word for this other side, in a sense, you know.
Right.
Like it could be heaven, it could be hell, it could be also just like where Bigfoot are, you know. It's like a weird. We can't, and it has all different names, all through different cultures and everything. So
right. It's
like it turns out maybe we're all talking about the same thing.
Yeah, it usually does. And then again, when you go back and put on top of this the idea that our science is now catching up to these ancient myths, saying to us that there are other realms and that we can interact with them, and the top physicists are saying, yeah, these formulas predict it, and the rest of the formulas have all completely proven out to be correct. So why shouldn't we be thinking, you know, that we've got science on our side and the human experience, and it's not a crazy thing to look into, at least.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. For sure. And it's like, and the funny thing is because science doesn't look into it, we get these anecdotal stories that are even more, you know, amazing. Because they're like real people. It's not just something that happens in a lab. It's really
right. Strange.
It's strange. And you talk about how it connects kind of the Native American lore, but also in a modern way, not to get too deeply into this, but it's like it also, you know, you hear about this missing 411 phenomenon, and it's like, well, portals would be a good explanation for where some of these people are disappearing to, you know. If
yeah.
they can come out
yeah.
of the portals, people may be able to go in, or whether they like it or not, whether they want to or not. So who knows?
Yeah, I know people who do believe that those missing people are all going into portals. And I can't argue with that because I don't know.
Maybe not all of them, but yeah.
Whatever's
all of them.
Doing it, yeah, me too. Whatever's doing it leaves very few things in the way of clues, you know, to go back and deduce. I mean, the people most of the time are just gone.
Right.
And not seen again, you know, and... I actually believe that my husband and I moved about a year ago, and I believe that the woman we bought this house from may have almost been a missing 411 person, because we had to delay our house closing due to the fact that she and her husband were up in Canada, and they were taking a hike. Actually, she was hiking with her grown son and two small grandchildren. I mean, like toddler and kindergarten.
Oh, my God, this already sounds like one of those stories, yeah?
it does, yeah. And she's, you know, not a large woman. You know, I met her. She's probably about my height. I'm about 5'1". And probably, I don't know, 60-ish, something like that. So they're walking on this trail in one of the big, beautiful forests up in Canada, and it's a nice trail. You know, the kids, when you've got little guys that age and they're walking along just nicely, you know that it's a well-kept trail. They weren't making the kids climb over rocks or anything like that. So they're just walking along. Her grown son is in the front of the line, the two little boys, and then she's bringing up the rear. And all of a sudden, they stopped and turned around, and they couldn't see her. She wasn't there. And so they run back and they look, and she's lying. Evidently, she somehow on this nice, easy trail with no slippery things on it managed to fall over backwards. There was a rock next to her head that they couldn't tell if it had actually hit her or if somehow she had just unexplainably flipped backwards and fallen hard on this rock, which didn't make any sense. And she was completely, you know, she had a very bad case of brain damage to the back of her skull and woke up a month later.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, in a hospital in Canada, and had absolutely no clue what had happened. But it was
Yikes.
a serious enough blow that she was legally blind from it. You know, it had destroyed that much of her vision just from the brain. Now, how does a healthy walking woman, you know, who hiked and did all that kind of thing, fall over backwards with enough force on a non-slippery surface to give herself brain damage to that degree? I think that whatever it was, and I have no idea what the agent, I think that whatever the agent was, looked at her and thought, well, I don't think she's right for us. And just left her that. Either that or the sun turned around just in time or something, you know. But I really believe she was a near miss of the 411 because it just fit so many
criteria.
And it just didn't make sense how she would have got. Nobody saw her fall or heard anything at all. And she wasn't far away. It wasn't like she was a half mile behind them.
Yeah, exactly. Like she, like it was silent apparently too, right? So she didn't yell or scream or
no.
Holler out, you know, in pain or anything. So it's like, or in shock, you know. I mean, I know me. If I something I slipped like that, there'd be a lot of loud expletives echoing through the forest. So,
right.
You
and,
know, the fact
and,
that nobody hurt her is weird.
Yeah, I don't think she did slip. I really don't, because it just doesn't make any
sense.
Yeah.
And exactly.
They didn't hear anything crashing through the underbrush at her or. You know, anything like that, if it had been something like a cougar sitting up in a tree waiting and deciding to, well, first of all, it would have taken out one of the youngsters first because they always go for the easiest so they won't be hurt. But it would have jumped on her back or her neck and bit her in the neck, you know, first thing, and that would have hit, would have pushed her down onto a rock and run away. So or maybe I don't claim to know exactly how cougars think, but it's unlikely from things I've read that they would do it that way. So it's
part of me is like wonders if it's like maybe a bird of prey like swooped down and just smacked her in the head and realized it was like a person, like a, it wasn't a rabbit or whatever, it was like a person. But I don't know.
Yeah.
And then
dropped her head on the rock, they would have had to have done, because that was the rock.
Yeah, or like Jostler, but even then it would be like. Even that, like I said, I mean, if a bird swooped down in the head, I think he'd say something. I think he would yell something that, like, people ahead of you would be like, did you just hear that? Which apparently did not happen.
Or something, no, and something with wings that big, something big enough, and it would have to be huge, ginormous, to pick up a woman who weighed, I don't know, she probably weighed 120 pounds, something like that.
Oh, right. I mean, I wasn't thinking necessarily that it would have to pick her up. Just could have just swooped down and tried to for a second and then been like, oh, wait, no, this isn't a rabbit. But who knows?
Yeah.
It's very strange.
More than I
very strange.
Yeah, very much so. But, you know, this kind of thing could just happen to us on any given day and we never know. That's the thing. People who see most the Bigfoot or the Wolfman or whatever, they're not the people who are really dying to see it and out there with, you know, all kinds of equipment all over them. It's the people who are just going about their business. And then for some reason happen to chance upon these things. And maybe they're chosen to see it. Some people really feel that way. I don't know if that's true or not. But I know that when I've had experiences, it's been times when I was by myself with no camera, nothing, where I just, you know, decided to go in a walk and something happened. You know, it was never when I'm all outfitted with a nice crew and everything like that. Although I've had a couple of things happen lately with people along while hiking. I'll tell you real quickly. I was hiking in the Kettle Moraine State Forest, which is in southeast. It's quite an unusual sort of landscape. Lots of very deep crevices and then ridges between them. The glacier, courtesy of our last glacier. And I'm walking along, and I was in a part of the forest where I'd been with this other lady friend of mine, and she and I were driven out by something clicking rocks together in several places at the same time. It was
weird.
Really, really eerie. Yeah, and it was right after she had put down like a little token, and it was an apple and a little piece of bread or something. She likes to feel that she's giving something, you know, so that they know we come in peace. And she had just done that, and then the clicking started. And then there was a second one clicking and another clicking. And we just
like
finally
rocks,
just
like rocks
yeah,
being
yep,
stuck together.
That
creepy.
Exactly like yeah, they were rocks, I'm quite sure. And they paced us as we went back out on that path from both sides of the path. It wasn't just one
Ooh.
Spot. We could hear them in the woods on either side making those clicking sounds. Well, I went back a month or two I went back a month or two ago with her and with another good friend. And we went down that same path, and she had some token food along, you know, too, and we were looking for a good place to set it. We didn't want it to seem like we were trying to feed deer or anything like that. And
right.
I noticed there was kind of a neat formation of branches below us on the trail. We were on a trail where to one side it rose up, and to the other side you had to look down into these trees. And I said, mm-hmm. you know, this looks like a good place to leave some food. And I was just getting my camera up. And when I said food, the three of us were all standing and looking down into this lower level of vegetation. And when I said food, this thing came flying up from down there. Now,
this is the crab apple, right?
Off,
I believe we talked about this.
The crab apple,
yeah.
Yes.
Spooky.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, it was the crab apple. Crab apples don't fall up off a tree. They fall
yeah.
down. This thing flew up and landed right between our feet on the trail. So it was thrown with pinpoint accuracy from a level below us. And we did all have cameras and things, but it was just three women out for a hike, you know, so we probably still didn't seem too imposing. But it was that same area. And it's just too coincidental. And everybody was just amazed because we saw it flying, you know. We saw where it came from, and we couldn't see anything that was throwing it. There was enough vegetation exposed
right.
to. But I think if a human had thrown that, they would have had to have been out in the open in a spot where we could have seen them, and they would have had to be looking at us and throw it overhand like a baseball.
Right, right,
and
from the angle it came in towards you and everything.
Right, and we didn't see anything like that. So, and people don't usually
very
go down
weird.
When. Yeah, it is. And people don't go down in those crevice areas because they're full of thorns and briars and weird things, and you'd have a very hard time getting out of one in time if something big did come at you. You know, it's really not safe to be down in them. So yeah, it's not always big. Well-equipped crews that have anything, and usually it is not at all that have anything happen to them. Because I think, again, all these creatures seem to have a sensitivity to any kind of electromagnetic field emitted by a machine. They may even smell, I thought they must smell the oil and the metal on guns when people have them. They're probably very aware of everything that we're carrying. At
I would
least
assume
in some
so,
way.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I got to commend you. I laughed about this with Robert Schneck, who we also met in Portland, about how
yeah.
adventurous you are. You are so much braver than I am, Linda. She said earlier, Brooke, she's 5'1". You have a very maternalness about you. You remind me of like a school teacher, and it's like you're out in the woods having crab apples thrown at you by mysterious forces. And in the book, at one point. I want to return to sort of the portal stuff. You mentioned, you're like, well, you know, Ed Mann, we've gone over this guy's experience, and he had all the notes, and then it's like, and now it's time for the stakeout. And I'm like, oh, my God, Linda's going to stake out this werewolf, this weird portal werewolf thing. She's amazing. So I'm blown away. You're braver than I am by a country mile, for sure. So
well,
I was thinking.
I don't know if I'd be braver than you. It's just maybe it's dumber.
I would hide behind you if we encountered something in the forest. But what you were saying in a sense too made me think where it's like if I don't know. I would have to say, folks, bring your cell phone. But part of me thinks like if people walked in the woods more, they'd be more likely to have odd experiences, whether it's like a Bigfoot sighting or a canine cryptid or a portal or something. You know what I'm saying? It's like it's probably not going to happen to you if you go to the mall. But if you're out walking in nature, you're probably more likely to experience something, you know, out of the ordinary, I think.
Right. I agree, you know, and it's not like it has to be deep forest. People think,
Right.
I have to go out to the West Coast and the great huge redwood forests and you know, that's where all the sightings are and where it's all happening, but that's really not true. You know, I don't think anybody's believing that anymore, because I think that we maybe have slightly different subspecies of some of these animals as they move eastward, because the terrain changes and they just sort of adapt as best they can to the changing terrain. But it does happen. I mean, I've had really good dogman sighting with footprints left and all kinds of things happening in a little town called Heartland, just outside of Milwaukee, really not far at all. And it's just a regular neighborhood where the backyards all meet up. You know, you look out your back window and you see your neighbors looking out their back window. And it was as good a sighting as any. It was by a woman whose dog was barking at like 1 in the morning, and she thought he had to go out, and went back out on the deck. And right along the border between her yard and the neighbor behind her, they had a kind of a lane of mulch where she planted different things. And it was walking along this mulch lane, and at first she thought it was a man wearing a long gray coat. And then she realized there was just enough light, because there was a lot of neighbors had their porch lights or their deck lights, or they'd leave a light on at night. And so she had just enough light to really see him. And she said he got closer, and she realized it was like a dog or a wolf dog hybrid walking on its hind legs, covered in gray fur. And it just barely cleared a branch that we went back and measured, and it was 6 feet. So it was 6 feet tall on its hind legs. Paid no attention to her or the dog, just kept walking, walked through, and then went into some bushes that led to a little wild space that then would have enabled it to get out in a big, the big grassy area to the side of an interstate. So, and then that led to lake country, lots of little lakes around there in that area, and up into the northern Kettle Moraine unit. So, I do use maps a lot. They're another really handy tool. You think, oh, there couldn't have been anything there. What? How would it be in these people's backyard? And then you look on the map, and you can use, I like atlases just as well as Google Earth, but you look at a combination of things, and you can see, oh, yeah, it could go there, and then it went there. And there's always a lane where it could come in from. But, and we even did get, she had other, I was there within a couple of days. She found me right away, and I went out and looked around, and we found this. It was heavy enough, whatever it was. Well, we know what it looked like anyway. It was heavy enough to punch footprints into this mulch. And she and I both tried jumping on the same mulch, and we weren't able to make a dent. I said, well, you know, I don't want to alarm you, but we should go look around your house, around your windows too. And sure enough, we found several of those same footprints angled at the window that her daughter slept in, angled in such a way that it would have been looking right at the child in her bed. And that totally freaked her out. Yeah. So I advised her to get a trail cam and put it up on her desk. And she did get photos of a couple of these misty, they look like mist, but they're not really water mist. It's just some sort of translucent substance. Column-shaped areas of mist, separate shots that were taken, as it evidently was up near her desk, because we took a person of the same height and had him stand where they would have had to have been, and it was within a few feet of her deck.
Right. What amazes me is the mist. The mist is, that's not the first, that's not the only mist story in the book. I was actually more amazed, in a sense, by the daytime photos in the book of the mist.
Right.
At the I guess it's a farm or a ranch, or I'm not sure what you'd call it.
Yeah.
You'll fill me in. But talk about that, because people should buy this book just to see these pictures, folks. It's really, and I mean, you can say all you want about, oh, it's could be this, it could be that, it could be like photographic error, or, you know, someone breathing on the thing. It's like, sure, fine, whatever. But if we consider the what we want to talk about, which is like, is this something paranormal? It's pretty mind-blowing. These mist, the mist is really like, it's remarkable. So I guess talk about that story and how these mist pictures came to be.
Yeah, and again, you know, we call it mist because it looks like a mist, but it can't really be, because there's no obvious connection to any sort of water phenomena. You know, there's no dew. There's
They
have very discrete edges. It's not like when you see a morning mist, and I've seen these over fields and things like that. You know, they're hazy looking. They look sort of like cloud formations. They're not discrete contours like a column that you can make out with edges. And probably the easiest one to explain this was a daytime one. It was taken in the morning by a trail cam or game cam that was set to look at directly at a 60-pound deer, a roadkill deer. And the person who owned this hay farm was trying to figure out what had been making mutilations on some smaller roadkill animals that he had seen, like there was a raccoon and a possum, that sort of thing. So he had it trained on this deer, and where it was at first, for hours and hours, you can see the deer legs sticking out from this kind of grassy nest that he had dropped it into. And then all of a sudden, for about the period of half an hour or so, there were like 90-some photos altogether. Something was tripping this, whatever it was. All of a sudden, you go from sunny morning, you can see where the sun is, it's clear as a bell, to there is a translucent column of something right over the deer, blocking out its feet, so you can't see anything but this column. And it's there.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm going to interrupt you to put this over, folks. You got to get this book, folks, because it is, Linda puts it, sort of lays out these pictures in sort of a relative time lapse format. You know, we don't see all 90, thank God, because it would be a cool flip book. That would be great.
Yeah.
No, that would be good.
Right.
But it's just a baffling, it's a haze. It's like a weird cloud. Part of me was like, could this be insects or something? I don't know. But, you know, I'm more favoring sort of this, I don't know what it is. You know what I'm saying? It's like, I doubt it's insects. But who knows? But it's a weird, it's a really weird cloud that, you know, I don't know what to make of it, but there's something to it. And I don't think it's like, I don't think somebody breathed on the lens, folks. Like, if it just hung around for 30 minutes and disappeared.
No. No, well, it was a trail cam. Nobody could have breathed on the lens without showing up
in the photos.
You know, it was just there. One second it wasn't there, and then the next, all of a sudden, it was. And it was there as long as whatever it took. Well, here's the kicker. When it did disappear, so all of a sudden, okay, the translucent column of whatever is gone, so were the deer legs. And when he went, Pam, and discovered the deer was gone, he also saw 5-toed canine prints very deeply impressed into the soil. And as far as he could tell, they were bipedal. There were no forepaw prints. And it had to go over or somehow through or under a barbed wire fence and then landed on the other side and went to, and he and a friend, and I'm talking about the owner of this hayfield, he and a friend tracked it all the way across the neighboring field till they came to the road and then, of course, lost it, you know, on the hard asphalt. But so something removed it without dragging it. It was picked up. There were no drag marks. It was picked up and carried away by something that made bipedal dog prints. I don't know how much more clear
bizarre
you can get than that. It's still
this
very
is
bizarre.
After, this is coming out of, this is like, this occurred when the cloud thing was there.
Right.
Ostensibly,
it had
right?
to have.
Yeah,
yeah, it had to have been moved because before the thing came and got itself in place there, there was nothing except the deer legs, and then when it left, all of a sudden, and it wasn't like it faded out either like a normal mist. It was like all there and then gone, behaved that way either, you know. And
right,
it wasn't
right.
a windy day. It was just a normal sort of day. And I have a researcher friend who was contacted by somebody who lives near Lake Geneva, maybe about 10 miles away, who found the exact same thing from his trail camera. And it was almost an identical, with a column-shaped structure that was over, you know, a dead animal. So, yeah, and then I've had other reports of it, too, from policemen and all sorts of people.
Even a man who is pure in heart and says his prayers by night may become a wolf when the wolfbane blooms and the autumn moon is bright.
You're listening to Banal of America Audio. Well, that's a very rare piece. It shows the wolf in the pentagram, the sign of the werewolf.
Werewolf? What's that?
Well, that's a human being who at certain times of the year changes into a wolf.
You mean runs around on all fours and bites and snaps and bays at the moon?
Oh, even worse than that sometimes.